now. I've been talking for a while. I'm gonna pause. And I'll read next. I'll read page 8, which is called the intelligence standard. And that's just a way of essentially reorienting how we, I guess, rate systems. My goal is to really introduce a way to rate systems, right? No, there's a gold standard. I think there should be an intelligence standard. An intelligence standard would be essentially a way to measure the completeness and consistency of a system, to account for the fact that the system will be interoperable, or will be able to work symbiotically with all other systems around it. That's how we account for the interaction variable. So I'll pause for 1 second. Okay, back. Okay, so the intelligence standard. So the equation presented in the publication is equivalent to the gold standard or other historical anchors, where monetary value was pegged to something with intrinsic value to avoid the perils of inflation and deflation. In essence, because the equation presented in the publication is the blueprint of nature itself, all systems pegged to this abstraction will theoretically be anchored to this Genesis block, if that is, in fact, Genesis block or the zeroth block of the universe. So we will coin this the intelligence standard. And because biological systems, human systems, are also intelligent systems, this would mean that our interactions also can be fundamentally modeled or defined by this fundamental abstraction of this equation. So essentially, this asset is going to be a North Star. It's going to reorient how we perceive nature itself. And it defines intelligence, defines intelligence systems, and it defines intelligence interactions, which are the three main components to define a complete and consistent system. So the next on page 9 here, I'm gonna read. Let me see. Actually, I'm gonna go to page 10 because page 9 is really short. I'm gonna read page 10. Page 10 is on computability. Page 10 here. So computability. In 1931, Kurt Gödel published his first incompleteness theorem, and he changed logic forever. Gödel's first incompleteness theorem stated that no single formal system could completely define all mathematical truths, and that physical theories depend on mathematical theories, which are incomplete because they contain unprovable statements. So essentially what Gödel is saying here is that math itself is not going to be mathematics itself is not going to be suitable to even measure the totality the totality of the universe or nature, whatever you want to call it, because math itself is discrete. Math itself is a discretized representation of something that we're trying to model, and that itself is a limitation. So if our mathematics is in itself limited, you know, then essentially that means a lot of our knowledge systems, if not all of our knowledge systems, would also have this, you know, incomplete aspect of it. And, you know, Kurt Gödel called it incompleteness and inconsistency. And Alan Turing called it incomputability. Essentially, and this is something that we see. You know, we see this. This duality actually persists throughout all systems. If you go from, you know, the incomplete, complete, inconsistent, imaginary, real, physical, this duality, electromagnetism, gravity, this duality persists all the way through the spine of the universe. So, you know, maybe what Turing and Gödel were pointing to was just a fundamental boundary. And this boundary could be how we use, could be our basis for designing a generalized system to model the interaction of everything, regardless of perspective or dimension. So that leads to the next page 11 here, where I talk about generalization. Because I believe generalization is obviously going to be key to understanding intelligence. So Gödel. So Gödel's and Kuprinius theorems, Turing's incomputability theorems, and Markov's normal algorithms were monumental because they pointed out an encapsulating boundary around mathematical theories. Finite error algorithms and computable functions resulting from the incompleteness and inconsistency or incomputability, if we're going to talk about, if we're going to invoke Turing here. So this paper aims to show that that algorithmic efficiency can be more completely determined by not only accounting for the complexity of the computation that the algorithm carries out, but for the algorithm itself. So what I mean by that is that, so a lot of the times we're measuring the efficiency of something, whatever it is, we're measuring the efficiency by measuring how, so as aforementioned, I talked about time complexity, space complexity. So we're optimizing just those two variables because we're trying to optimize what it's going to do. We're optimizing its computation, right? So I guess the point that I'm trying to make here is that, not only do we have to account for what computation it carries out, but the algorithm itself has to be optimal. But now the question becomes, how do we determine that an algorithm itself is the most optimal algorithm that, you know, that exists, essentially the most fundamental algorithm? And that becomes the question, how do we essentially define generalization? What is generalization? What is, can generalization solve abstraction? And because of course abstraction is going to be a main part of intelligence also, right? Is if we generalize, can we then abstract? Because if we can abstract, then we can essentially reverse engineer a lot of different complex systems, even if it's at a low level or at a high level, biological systems, for example. So this means that a formalization of generality has to be measured in two directions. So it means that it must be the most optimal abstraction, as well as also exhibit the most optimal efficiency in computation. So, we have to look at it. And I think that's one of the issues with a lot of our perspective today. It's so utility focused. It's a utility perspective that we forget to account for the fact that it's not just the problem that we're trying to solve. We have to optimize just the way we even think about the problem itself, which is where the whole generalization problem comes, which hasn't been solved yet, from my understanding. I think I solved it, but academia it hasn't been solved yet to them. So the next one is page 12, dimensional complexity. And this is where so the first couple of pages were just me introducing the concept, but I think I started getting a bit deeper as we go. So dimensional complexity, page 12. So how do we compare algorithms to measure their efficiency? Typically, algorithmic efficiency is measured by complexity. Computational complexity can be measured in space and time, as I've mentioned. Space complexity denotes space required for execution, and time complexity denotes the number of operations required to complete execution. So time complexity is measured by the number of iterations it takes for an algorithm to execute. And space complexity is measured by the amount of memory or space required for the algorithm to execute. So theoretically speaking, minimizing time complexity and space complexity should increase the efficiency of an algorithm, we would assume, right? And I think that's we all agree that yes, if we optimize time complexity, optimize space complexity, we should increase the efficiency of the algorithm, right? We agree. Okay, but now going back to what I said previously, those two variables only account for the computation that the algorithm is carrying out. We haven't yet accounted for the dimensional complexity, which is what I introduced here. We haven't yet accounted for the actual fundamental algorithm that defines the problem. Right, so we're just solving on. So essentially, what's happening here is that we're accounting just for on the right side. We're accounting for the right side of the equation, and we're optimizing that, but we're not optimizing on the left side. And that's what creates the inconsistency. That's what creates inconsistency. So even though we can get some pretty useful models by optimizing those two fundamental constraints only, right? As complexity grows, as systems grow, we start to see that, by not accounting for that fundamental baseline algorithm, the system itself starts to essentially it starts to grow in dimensionality, or it starts to grow farther and farther away from that origin. It starts to lose connection, essentially, and that's why systems collapse. They get more and more disconnected from that original algorithm that gives the rules of how it should interact, emerge, and evolve. So theoretically speaking, minimizing time complexity and space complexity should increase the efficiency of an algorithm. With this understanding, we can deduce that the optimally efficient algorithm has close to zero time complexity and zero space complexity. So like I said earlier, if we're going to optimize space and time complexity, then it means that the most optimal algorithm is going to require no time and no space. So from a theoretical perspective, even if it cannot be replicated experimentally, theoretically speaking, the most optimal algorithm, at least on the right side, when it comes to the computation that's going to be carried out, has to have the least amount of space complexity and time complexity, which in this case, we're going to put those as zeros. So zero time complexity, zero space complexity will give you the most optimal computation algorithm. But we haven't yet accounted for the other side of the equation. Just the right side. So this means that, so with this, we can deduce that an optimally efficient finitary algorithm has zero time complexity and zero space complexity and an infinite dimensional complexity. Thus, finitary algorithms have dimensional complexities that are less than infinite. So what I mean by finitary algorithms is basically the moment it's going to do a computation, the algorithm becomes a finitary algorithm. And finitary algorithms, the moment an algorithm becomes finitary, it becomes post-emergent. So it becomes post-emergent, and then its space complexity and dimensional complexity are now not going to be zero on are not going to be zeros. They're going to be higher, right? And then the dimensional complexity is what's going to also change, because that's going to go from infinity to something that's less than infinite. So, like I said earlier, finitary algorithms are useful for solving problems, but there is no fundamental algorithm that we use to compare finitary algorithms to. So, as I've mentioned, this makes calculating the efficiency of a finitary algorithm inconsistent and complicated, because we're only accounting for one side of the calculation. We're only accounting for the for the computation, not for the algorithm itself. So a system outlined by Kurt Gödel measures the algorithm by the completeness and consistency. And on his paper, on formally undecidable propositions of Principia, Mathematica, blah, 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 Gödel outlines his two theorems of incompleteness and inconsistency, which I talk about here, so you can read that. This essentially means that until a complete and consistent theory is deduced to explain emergence interaction and evolution, then essentially this door that we've been trying to unlock when it comes to whether it's algorithms or it comes to the universe or it comes to intelligence, this door has to be first unlocked. This door has to be unlocked for us to understand, for us to be able to get a complete perspective. And this would mean understanding the emergence, which is a key topic, emergence, interaction, and evolution of systems. So essentially, if the governing rules of all algorithms are infinitary, then the hypothetical question that Gödel will ask is, which algorithm is most complete and consistent? Which is, how do we model the most complete and most consistent algorithm? Is the question that we have to ask ourselves here. So this paper aims to show that finitary algorithms are fundamentally incomplete and inconsistent. So this means that all the AI systems that we're building today there's a fundamental flaw. I don't want to use the word flaw. It has connotations to it, but it's not tethered to this fundamental algorithm. So we're going to experience a lot of inconsistencies in the future if we're going to use those as the foundation of our civilization, which I don't think we should, of course.